welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, bringing you an hour of drama. Later on, it's the Encore Theater with actress Ida Lupino, but right now, Vincent Price and Kathy Lewis team up for the Philip Morris Playhouse in a play called Leona's Room by Morton Fine. This from February 25th, 1949 on CBS.
Johnny presents the Philip Morris Playhouse. Produced, edited, and directed by William Spear. Tonight's star, Vincent Price. And now, with Vincent Price as star, we bring you Leona's Room, tonight's production in the Philip Morris Playhouse.
Leona was laughing. For me, there was no joy in it anymore. Her room had suddenly become exactly what it was. Two flights up and walk back, a cubicle in a cheap rooming house. Four sides of naked plaster with a single electric light bulb strung from the ceiling and the frayed rug. The furniture with a patched upholstery and the rust-stained basin in the corner. And Leona. Leona with a drink in her hand. The room was a fine backdrop for Leona.
Oh, come on, honey. Drink your drink. You want Leona to fresh it up for you.
Forget it.
Oh, honey. Oh. Come on, make Leona laugh some more. That's why we're here, isn't it? For laughs?
Just for that. For a big time, the two of us. Yeah. Me and Leona, whatever your last name is, and let the rest of the world go by. I'm funny, huh? I'm a funny man.
I should have met you a long time ago instead of just tonight. Leona gets a big reaction from you, honey.
You got your last one, kid. I'm leaving.
Just like that. Leaving. Leona remembers when you liked her, honey. Leona remembers when you
That was 2 hours ago. You looked a lot better then.
Oh, that's great. That's the greatest one yet. The great Philip Dane and
How do you know my name?
Know your name, honey. Your picture in the paper every day over that lousy scandal column that you write. You with your famous white carnation in your lapel. Sure, honey. I knew who you were all the time.
Yeah. So go dream your dream about how once Philip Dane was nice to you. Right now, that's all.
Wait a minute. Don't go yet.
Get out of my way.
Come on. Tell Leona you're sorry for what you said. I like you, honey.
Look, I've got no more time to play with you. Now, let me out of this.
Give me a kiss. Give me a kiss, Phil. You'll see. Leona isn't what you said.
I said get out of my way.
Phil, that's what you are, Mr. Dane. You're filth. A two-bit cheapster. Thinks he gives a girl a moon with a smile and a couple of drinks. You write poison about other people and sneak up the side streets to have your... Sure. Sure, hit me. That's what you're supposed to do. You and me. We're an item, aren't we, both of us? Filth.
Second, I stared where she had fallen. Motionless, her face all at once like scraped bone. I turned to go, but the afterimage of a lot of other faces stopped me. On my beat, I had seen a lot of dead faces, and hers matched. Her head lay against the lead piping of the wash basin. I watched a small red pearl squeeze through her lips, and then it died, too. Fingerprints! I touched two things in that room, Leona and the highball glass. I smashed it on the floor and ground it with my heel. Now there was no possible connection between Leona and me. I had met her alone only 2 hours ago. Sometime soon, the police would look at her and write out a tag that said, dead on arrival. Maybe they would even find out what Leona's last name was.
Ah!
When I got outside, it was raining. That was a break because the rain had washed away the human rubbish that always littered that neighborhood, and there was no one to see me leave the house. The color bled out of the neon signs and smeared across the wet pavements, and I started walking. I remembered somewhere in this part of town there was a five-a-day vaudeville house that had hung on through the years like a broken-down acrobat left stranded on a high trapeze. I'd meant to cover it many times in my column for laughs. I figured tonight was as good as any. The gaiety, it looked real happy. I bought a ticket, went inside, and found a seat. I looked around at the audience, what there was of it. Farmers and juvenile delinquents was what I'd call them in the column. The billing card slipped into place for the next act. Malbrino and Maya, it said. The curtain went up. Malbrino stood with his back to the audience, his arms reaching out for Maya. I bent forward. She was something. Her eyes were enormous and gray and deep enough to drown.
There are those among you who will disbelieve what you are about to witness. I say to you only, wait. I will descend among you and walk down the aisle. And here I choose a gentleman and ask him for some small object whose description is known only to himself. Do you have such an object, sir?
Yeah, I got a good one. Here.
Thank you.
Yeah, they'll never guess.
Maya!
I listen, Malbrino.
What is it that I hold in my hand?
It is something that has come from far away. It is an envelope, postmarked Paris, France.
Correct! An envelope, postmarked Paris, France. Very good. Maya!
Yes, Malbrino.
Thank you, madame. Reach into the spaces beyond space and tell me, what is this precious thing I hold in my hand?
It is a locket. And inside there is a strand of golden hair. A child.
Yes, it's my little boy. Isn't that wonderful?
This that this gentleman has given to me.
Malbrino.
Do not lose your concentration, Maya. Identify this object.
Malbrino.
You must.
There is darkness here. Only darkness. He stands in the way.
Maya!
There is a murderer here. Huh? A murderer!
They rang down the curtain and I sat there. I glanced around at my fellow spectators. Some of the audience was laughing. Obviously, these were people who had written the thing off as a dramatic trick. But others were obviously affected by it. And I, you'll laugh. You'll say this was naive, superstitious, ridiculous, but I had to find out. I had to make sure. I waited until the house began to give attention to a song and dance act. There was a door to the left of the orchestra pit that led backstage. I slipped out of my seat and headed for it, as if it were my business. I walked down a corridor. There were cells on each side tagged with the performers' names. Maya's door had a star on it. The star was gilt, and it was peeling.
A moment.
Yes?
She was taller than I had thought, and slender. Her face was delicate with an almost wistful expression. But it was her eyes, gray and soft, as if the color had been strained through gauze.
Yes? What is it?
I came back to congratulate you on your performance, Maya. That's quite an act, big time.
Thank you. But it is not an act.
No? You're good, Maya, very good. Why haven't I seen this act that isn't an act before?
Malbrino and Maya are from Europe. It is the first time we have been in this country.
How long have you been here?
Tonight was our first performance. It did not end as we had planned.
It couldn't have looked more rehearsed.
Believe what you like. Now, please excuse me, I am quite exhausted.
Don't run out on me. It makes me write bad notices.
Write what you like. It cannot concern Maya.
Why did you say there was a murderer in the theater?
I do not know why I say things.
My lips speak the words that truth shapes for them. There was a murderer. I felt his presence.
Do you still feel it?
Yes.
My taxi cab is waiting to take us to the hotel.
This is a newspaper man, Malbrino.
Oh, it's always a delight to meet a fellow professional. Wait for me in the taxi, Maya. I'll be only a moment. You saw the extraordinary performance, Mr.
Dane, Philip Dane.
Ah, Philip Dane. Yeah. Your column is known even in Europe. I'm overcome, Mr. Dane. It's an honor that you should be a convert of Maya's miraculous powers.
Now, Malbrino, we don't have to kid each other, do we? We fellow professionals?
No. But others are perhaps not so perceptive as you. It is amusing to kid them. Also, one lives in this way.
Then that murderer bit was phony.
Let us say, an act such as ours needs one piece of sensationalism to shock a new audience. I think we have it. Do you agree?
You bought yourself a paragraph, Malbrino. I like your style.
I'm delighted and grateful.
Tell Maya something for
me. Yes, Mr. Dane.
Tell her eyes are the most beautiful eyes I have ever seen.
She would be pleased, for she is blind.
I dropped in to catch Gypsy Rose Lee's late show at the Martinique. On the way back to my apartment, I picked up the early edition of the News. There was a five-line story spliced between the financial column and port arrivals. The police had answered a call from a nervous landlady. Leona Michaels was dead. The body had been turned over to the coroner, that was all. That was all there was ever going to be. I took a pill and got to sleep. Woke a couple of times, hearing noises. Towards morning, I had a nightmare. I was standing in a big stone yard, and I was watching some men, some blind men, building a scaffold. They were hammering. And then I was awake. I jumped out of bed. Then I saw what the hammering had been. Nailed to my door, a shroud for a dead man, nailed to my door. With a funeral wreath of white carnations and pinned to one corner of the wreath a small white envelope. I pulled it down and opened it. I read the black-rimmed card inside. In memory of Philip Dane, it said, "Thou art cursed because thou hast killed."
Something for you, sir?
Yeah.
Just this morning, sir. Just arrived. Some fresh-cut camellias?
No flowers, a shroud. Talk to me about that.
Oh, my condolences, sir, of course. If you'll come this way.
A shroud that was delivered to 1256 Park Boulevard, Apartment 3, this morning from your shop.
Oh, yes. Yes, I remember such an order. I hope it met with your requirements.
I'm crazy about it. Why was it nailed on my door?
Why? I don't understand.
I didn't order it. Who did?
Why, early this morning, sir. Early this morning, there was a special delivery letter. In it was an order for a shroud and a wreath with instructions as to their disposition.
Yeah, but who? Who wrote the order? Who gave the instructions?
I don't really know, sir. The note was typewritten, unsigned. I thought someone who desired to remain anonymous...
Tell your boy to tear that thing off my door.
But, sir...
It was too early in the day to drink, but I found myself at the Chatham Bar. If I expected to find an answer in the bottom of a shot glass, it wasn't there. It wasn't anywhere I could think of. Nobody could have known I was in Leona's room. Nobody. I told myself that, and I felt better. I went back to my apartment for the thousand little details a columnist has to do, the phone calls, the letters, the... Someone was waiting in front of my door.
I took the liberty. I knew you wanted to see me.
Who are you?
Here, take one. My card.
That's all right. I can see from right here. It's real pretty. What does it say on it?
John Quirty, Lily Pardon Cemetery.
I see. Now tell me, it was a newspaper man asked you to come around and see me, wasn't it?
You know, we at Lily Pond like to think...
Never mind that. What do you want?
In this hour of your greatest need, we of Lily Pond are...
Are you going to tell me what you want, or do I have to beat it out of you?
Why, sir, I am here to make the final arrangement for the funeral.
Funeral? What funeral? Nobody's dead. Nobody's even feeling bad. Look,
Now, look, see, I live here. I live all by myself. I feel great. I never felt better.
Sir, I'm confused about the casket.
Look, it's a joke, a gag, something the boys cooked up. That's it, isn't it? That's it, isn't it? Talk to me.
Please.
Who sent you?
A letter. A letter this morning with money and instructions.
Typewritten, no signature.
That's right. It said to come to this address and make arrangements to receive the body.
Whose? Whose body?
The letters said the body of Philip Dane. It said Philip Dane was about to die. It said he was going to be executed for murder.
All of a sudden, there were no more words. His jaws were moving, but there was no sound. He was out of focus, bleary. I ran past him and out into the street. The cab took 10 minutes to get me to Leona's rooming house. If someone in that house recognized me as a murderer, I would know it no matter how he tried to hide it. I would know it. Face him and take it from there. That was the...
Yeah, what is it? Well?
Have you ever seen me before?
What?
I mean it. Have you ever seen me before? Have I ever been here before?
Seen you? How do I know if I ever seen you? You're wearing a necktie, ain't you? You got a shave? That makes it 10 to 1 against. And a carnation yet. That makes it 100.
Please, please. It's just that I have a feeling that I've been here before. I've got to find out.
Hey. Hey, you sick?
It happens like this lots of times. Amnesia, you know, the war. You sure you've never seen me?
Who knows, running this flea bag? They sign the register and they pay in advance. Hey, wait a minute. Heim! Heim, come here!
Who's that?
That's my husband. He snoops and he's got a memory.
You calling me?
Yeah. What'd you say you had, mister?
Amnesia.
You got amnesia? Ah, it's interesting, real interesting.
Gentleman wants to know if he ever saw him before. Says he's got to know.
No. Nope, never did.
How about your other guests? Could I see them?
Well, now I tell you. One of the roomers is sleeping off a 3-day drunk, and it'll take him 3 days to sleep it off. Another one I ain't seen for a week, and the third one's in a morgue. Moved there this morning, dead. That Leona always...
It's a gag, then.
Gag? What's a gag?
Never mind. Thanks, lady. All right. Yeah?
Hello, Mr. Dane. Mr. Philip Dane?
Yeah.
Mavrino speaking.
Mavrino?
Yes. Will you do me the honor to meet me at 11:30 tonight in the park? The reservoir will be charming.
Charm me over the phone, Mavrino. I don't like the cold night air.
It can be so helpful. Bring money with you. Say $5,000 for this first time. And come alone.
Have you gone crazy, Mavrino?
A murderer does not question another's sanity. To him, all other beings are insane. It's not so.
How would I know about murderers?
Ask Leona Michaels. Mm.
Leona? How did you find out about her?
You told me when you were so curious about a murderer after the performance. You told me when you permitted the grisly humors of the shroud and casket to force you to revisit the scene of death.
You've been following me.
Of course. Each of your flights of terror became more promising. Rooming house, I made inquiries. They told me of the lonely girl who had been murdered.
That was nice of them.
Wasn't it? I can expect you then at 11:30, Mr. Dane. That will give me time to change after my performance.
Sure. 11:30. I'll be glad to do you the honor, Malbrino. Now it was easier. Now I knew what to be afraid of. Mavrino, the clever Mavrino, whose wife Maya had pale, lovely, blind eyes. What an act they had. I wondered how many times their sensational finish had paid off like this. There's a murderer in this theater. And maybe he'll come backstage after the show and visit us.
Your ticket. Oh. They got a rule here. Everybody shows me a ticket.
Oh, the ticket. Yeah, here.
Uh-huh. That's one aisle over. 10th row. You won't have no trouble finding it. You can hunt deer in here tonight.
Gosh, I sure wasn't kidding. There weren't 30 people in the house at the Gaiety. The opening act was on, a family of Armenian jugglers whirling shiny hoops on every loose piece of anatomy on the stage. Malbrino and Maya were next to closing, so I figured I had about an hour. I waited until the Armenians were balancing everything but the proscenium. And just as they were taking their bows, I used the same orchestra entrance to backstage. The door to Maya's dressing room was open, and the room was dark. I eased inside just as the next act came hurrying down the corridor, still hooking up their costumes. I brushed against a moldy curtain hung from wooden rings. I pulled it back and hid behind it, and I waited.
Still, I cannot understand why you must leave me tonight, Malbrino. What is so important at 11:30?
Through the dim light of the corridor, I saw Maya walk into the room and sit at her dressing table. Malbrino was behind her. He was reaching for the light switch when my hands found his mouth and throat and began to strangle him. My fingers dug into his flesh. I crushed his breath back into his insides, and he made no sound. It was only the soft laughter that seeped through the theater and his soft throat in my hands, and then Maya's soft voice.
Why do you not answer, Malbrino? Is it a rendezvous? Malbrino? Malbrino, what is it? What is so silent? Malbrino? Malbrino!
Suddenly her fingers were on my face, furtive and quick as the wings of a frightened bird. Then slowly they began to search the empty air for the dead Malbrino. She turned and her blind eyes stared at me. I threw her aside and ran down the corridor. An old doorman was reading a newspaper at the stage door. I couldn't get out that way without his seeing me. There was only one way back, through the theater. I started up the aisle. Then I knew I was doing the wrong thing. There was an usher at the head of it in this tiny audience. If I left in the middle of an act, he would remember me. So I sat down in the row that was most filled. When I looked back, act after the next act, there were men in overcoats standing at each exit. And then the curtain rose and Maya stood there with a man I had never seen before.
Ladies and gentlemen, tonight I shall descend among you, accompanied by this gentleman, and read your minds through my fingertips. You, sir, I can read your innermost secrets by touching your face. So, sir, you told your wife you were working late at the office tonight. And you, sir, my fingers reveal that you came here on a pass.
Oh, well, I have a friend that's working.
Please. And now, there is a gentleman in this row wearing a carnation.
Hey, don't throw it away. What's the matter, Budge? Afraid Maya'll give away your secret?
Take your hands off of me.
Cooperate.
One side. Let go. Let me out.
Hey, get this guy, Joe. He's got secrets.
You got secrets, mister? Hey, Maya, there's a guy who's got secrets.
Shut up. Shut up, you fool.
Hurry up, Maya. You can't wait.
They held me there laughing. The others turned in their seats to stare. The man with Maya took her arm and led her to me. Her fingers reached out, trailed across my face. They were cool and gentle. Almost a kiss.
This is the man. This is a murderer.
Tonight, Tonight, the Philip Morris Playhouse presented Leona's Room, produced, edited, and directed by William Spear. Our star, Vincent Price.
You know, Johnny, it's amazing to me how our hero tonight had time to write his column, what with all his extracurricular activities. And speaking of heroes, I understand Academy Award contender Dan Daly is to be your star next week.
That's right, Mr. Price. And we've informed Mr. Daly by special messenger that there will be no dancing come next Friday. He's to be the villain in the piece.
That sounds intriguing.
And now, goodbye, Johnny. See you next Friday, same time, same station, when once again we will present the Philip Morris Playhouse, starring Dan Daly. Until then...
Home, Philip Morris!
The Philip Morris Playhouse, on Tuned to Yesterday from February 25th, 1949 on CBS. You're listening to an hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now time for the Encore Theater, starring actress Ida Lupino. In the same year of this next broadcast, she was on the silver screen as Emily Bronte in the motion picture Devotion, alongside Paul Hohenried and Olivia de Havilland. In this broadcast, she's the female lead along seasoned radio actors Jane Morgan, Norman Field, Jack Edwards, and Barney Phillips, in a CBS broadcast from August 20th, 1946.
Shenley Laboratories, producer of penicillin Shenley and Shenley Pharmaceuticals, presents the Encore Theater. The Encore Theater play tonight, Nurse Edith Cavell. Our star is Ida Lupino. It was morning when the German columns marched into Brussels, that unforgettable August of 1914. They got no welcome. The stores and windows were shuttered by command of the Burgomeister. Behind drawn curtains, the people waited the order of the conqueror.
The ordinances will be published for everyone to read.
Some of our people are very poor and can't read.
Your people need a lesson. They need discipline.
We are a free people. We don't respond very readily to discipline.
I don't like your tone.
I am sorry.
You must change it. You have a great influence in this city. Show a spirit of cooperation and acceptance of the new regime, and the people will follow you.
How little you understand them. The moment I do that, my influence, as you call it, would disappear. They would pass me by in the streets, as they do you, Herr Captain, without seeming to realize that I existed.
I think they will realize that I exist. That will be all. Who's next, orderly?
Fräulein Edith Cavell. Here is her card, sir.
British subject, qualified nurse. London trained, arrived Belgium. Appointed head of the Birkendale Medical. Converted August 14 to military ambulance 53. You're a British subject, Fräulein. Why have you remained in Brussels?
I have work to do here. We are converted into a military hospital.
For Belgian soldiers?
For the wounded.
Any wounded?
Yes.
You would nurse Germans?
Of course.
We will take over your home as a German military hospital. You will be permitted to remain in control.
Very well.
You will receive instructions concerning the transfer at our convenience. Here is your identification card. You will not leave Belgium without my permission. That will be all.
Good afternoon, Madame Rappard.
Miss Cavell, you're not doing your own shopping.
Oh, yes, we're short-handed now that the German and French nurses have left us.
Well, I'll have Philip carry your basket back for you.
Thank you. Any news of Jean?
Oh, I'm so afraid he's been captured. And they say they're shooting all the prisoners.
Oh, you mustn't believe all the gossip you hear. Why, I can't believe...
Grandmother!
Jean!
They're after me. I saw them coming down the street. Don't let them get me.
Quick. Get him to the back of your quarters. Hurry.
Come on, Jean.
Hurry. Into a closet for the moment.
Wir wohnen in diesem Haus.
I'm afraid I... Ich nicht sprechen Deutsch.
English?
Yes.
Who lives here?
Madame Rappard. She's not very well. Her heart, you see. She's rather elderly. If there are any questions I can answer...
We are billeting troops. How many can she take here?
I believe four.
Four. They will be here within the hour.
Very well.
Good day, Fräulein.
Achtung!
Madame Lapa, Jean. My dear, you heard they're billeting troops here.
What are we to do? They're sure to find him.
Well, keep him here till tonight. Then I'll take him to the home. Get out some old clothes and have them ready for me when I come. I'll be here directly after curfew.
Look at this wire. Refugee prisoners are reported to have escaped from internment camps in the Mons area, probably seeking refuge in Brussels. Captain Heinrich, you will take the necessary steps to apprehend all refugee soldiers and advise the civil population of the penalty of harboring them.
I will, Excellency.
The Belgians do not approve of our being here, Heinrich.
No, Excellency, but it's time to learn how a country should be run. Anyone who harbors a refugee soldier will provoke the severest penalties.
Madame Moulon.
Good heavens, Nurse Cavill. What brings you down to the waterfront?
May we talk quietly? It's very urgent.
We are just getting our barrels onto the barge. We'll be gone by midnight.
You remember Madame Rappard?
Of course. She has the bakery shop and the two grandsons.
Yes, that's right. Well, the elder Jean was taken prisoner.
Oh.
But escaped and made his way across country to home. I hid him for a day in the hospital.
How on earth did you manage that with the Germans underfoot all the time?
Well, there are two cellars in the hospital with a small door between. Oh. I pushed a big wardrobe in front of that door. You'd never know it was there. But I must get him out now. And I wondered if you'd help me.
How?
By hiding him on your barge. Then getting him across the frontier into Holland. Would you do that?
Of course I would. Bring him down after dark tonight, and we'll hide him in a big barrel. We'll have him safely in Holland in no time at all.
I'll tell you, Edith, it was the most shocking thing I've ever witnessed. Because the soldiers were in civilian clothes, they lined them up, shot them as spies, in my very own courtyard.
It's horrible. I never thought I'd live to see such things.
You should come out in the country and see for yourself. They're hiding everywhere, in barns and ditches. Most of them wounded and sick. If you go to the far side of the woods beyond our castle, you can hear them moaning and crying for help.
Oh, he's safe. Jean is safe in Holland. Look, I've just had this card.
Oh, I'm so happy, Madame Rappard.
Oh, God bless you. God bless you for saving my boy.
Thank heaven that one is safe. But there are so many that need saving.
Yes. Yes, well, let us talk about that. The three of us and Madame Moulon. Perhaps something can be done for them, too. If we could get some of them here to the hospital.
That would be very dangerous for you, Edith.
But how could we do it? Of course, there's the ambulance. Yes, but how are we going to get it here? Our driver was called up a week ago, and I don't know that I can trust the new boy.
Well, I've never driven an ambulance, but I don't see why this isn't a good time to learn.
You will hide them in the same cellar where my boy was?
Yes.
When would you like to go?
What better time is there than the present? This foot is infected. I must treat it at once.
All three of them are unconscious now. They're so noisy. Are you sure they can't be heard upstairs in the hospital?
I'm afraid so. I have to go out for some dressings, try and keep them as quiet as possible.
You know, I can't believe we've actually got them here. And for the life of me, I don't know how we did it. Oh, me, driving that ambulance like it was a sewing machine. And Madame Rappard fainting every time a German came near us. It was a lucky thing, too, that there was no one at the back entrance when we arrived.
You're making more noise than they are.
Ooh, I do rattle on sometimes, don't I?
I'll get the bandages and medicine.
Oh, there you are, matron. What on earth are you doing to that old wardrobe?
Why, nothing, Sister Watkins. I was just pushing it back against the wall. It was out too far. Someone will be falling over it.
We've been looking all over for you, matron. The officer said it was urgent.
Officer?
Yes, it's a German officer. He's in your sitting room.
Very well, sister. I'll go at once.
Fräulein Gavel.
Yes?
I am Dr. Gunther of the German Medical Corps.
Yes.
We are transferring the first contingent of our wounded here today.
You will remove all civilian patients to their own houses. And any Belgian, French, or British wounded will be handed over to the German authorities.
Yes, Doctor. I understand.
What are you looking for, my friend?
A safe road and a quick journey.
For how many?
Three tonight, seven on Monday.
Here is a pack of playing cards. You will find the identification card you require in among them.
Thank you. Do you have the identifications ready, Countess?
Yes. They were able to use the photographs off the men's army identification cards.
Good. Can the barge start tomorrow, Madame Moulin?
Whenever you wish, Miss Cavill.
Tomorrow, then. Madame Moulin, are the guides arranged?
All arranged. Francois will guide them to the barge. All is well.
Yes. Yes, all is well.
Captain Heinrich.
Yes, Excellency?
You are head of the counter-espionage service here in Brussels, are you not?
Yes, sir.
Take a look at this map. You see that? Every one of our positions indicated. I'm convinced there's an organization here. This map is clear proof. Unravel it. You'll get to the heart of the organization.
I have an idea. It's only an idea. But let me try it.
Matron, there's a Belgian refugee waiting to see you in your sitting room.
Oh, thank you. I'll go right in. You're sure he's a Belgian refugee?
He is dressed as one.
May I go in with you, Edith?
Yes, of course. Yes. What is it, please?
Nurse Cavill, I have escaped from a German prison camp.
What is your nationality?
French.
From which prison camp did you escape?
Weininger.
Well, what can I do for you?
Well, help me to get out of Belgium and back to France so I can rejoin my regiment.
I see. Countess, will you please get Captain Heinrichs on the phone?
Oh, with pleasure. Captain Heinrichs, headquarters, please.
Why are you calling him?
Hello? Captain Heinrichs, please. Miss Cavill. Oh, here, Edith. He'll be right on.
Hello, Captain Heinrichs. I have a man here in the hospital who says he's an escaped prisoner of war, and I wish to hand him over to you. Oh, no, no, he can't escape. As you know, the hospital is well guarded. Yes, very well, goodbye.
Why did you do that?
I'm sorry. You came to the wrong place. I must ask you to remain in this room. You'd be very foolish to try and escape. Come along, Countess.
Oh, the look on his face. How did you know he was a German spy?
My dear, the same way you did. When you were in school, and when I was, Weininger was pronounced with a W and not with a V, except by the Germans. Captain Heinrich will be very disappointed when he sees the pigeon he has bagged.
One thing we know now, though, Edith. They're watching us. And they couldn't pick a worse time. We have 11 in the cellar. Shall these be the last?
No. No, as long as we're alive, we must help to the extent of our powers. As long as we can save men's lives. Whether it is by wit or by medical aid, we shall continue to do it. A doctor or a nurse, or a sincere patriot, like you, my friend, learns to have a great respect for the value of the human life. Yes, if you and I died tonight, we would know that over 100 live because of our efforts.
We will go on, Edith.
Yes. Yes, we will go on.
So the days passed, with a handful of valiant women defying the mighty German war machine. A nurse, a countess, an elderly French woman, and a younger one, who operated a barge with her husband. Night after night, the ambulance came ricketing to a stop, and the men were smuggled into the cellar. A few days later, when they were able to travel, with infinite courage and wise planning, they were taken out of danger on the barge. And then, one day...
He's terribly wounded in the head, Nurse Cavill. If something isn't done quickly, I think he'll die.
You say he's British?
Yes.
I'll get the ambulance and wait for you outside the back door, Edith.
Thank you. How far out of the city?
About 25 miles. He crashed in the woods.
I see. That's quite a way. But we shall manage.
We searched the whole wood, but we could find no trace of him.
He's got to be found, do you hear? Offer a reward, 500 francs, for any information leading to his arrest, dead or alive. Search every hospital and instruct all doctors and officers to report any unusual cases.
Yes, sir. Shall I interview Dr. Gunther first?
Where is Gunther?
At 149 Rue de la Culture.
Let me see. That's the nursing home run by...
The English woman, Cavill.
Cavill, eh? I think I'll go to see Nurse Cavill myself.
Well, you've seen the entire hospital, Captain Heinrichs, from the attic to the boiler rooms. May I ask now what is the occasion for such an extensive search?
A number of escaped prisoners are making their way out of the country. You understand, it is our duty to put a stop to this. It would be a most serious matter for those who engage in this traffic if they should be caught. Whether they are men or women, they would incur the severest penalties. Whether they are men or women, Miss Cavill, it is our duty.
It is your duty. You all know the routine now. You follow your guides as far as Malines, where you will be transferred to another agent. You all have your information cards and your 25 francs. Well, Godspeed. Follow the guide's instructions and you'll soon be safe. Lieutenant Wilson, give England my love.
Miss Cavill, I can never thank you enough for hauling me out of that plane. But, I've been wondering, what would they do if they found out you'd helped me? I mean, oughtn't you to hand me over to them now that I'm all right again?
Do you think I've nursed you back to life to have you shot?
You must want to go home yourself.
A nurse has no home.
But still, among foreigners...
There's only one human race, my dear.
But I hate the idea of your staying out here. They might turn round on you.
Yes, but if I ran away, I should turn round on myself and on my profession, which is to stay where I'm needed most. That would be far worse. Well, we've got to get you all out of here or you'll miss the barge. Good luck, and God take you safely home.
Countess Mavon?
Yes, Captain Heinrichs?
You are under arrest.
Under what?
You are under arrest.
How dare you? I demand...
You're under arrest for helping derelict soldiers to escape. You will come with us, please, Madame Rappard.
Take your hands off me.
You're under arrest. Madame Moulin, I arrest you for aiding derelict soldiers to escape. Nurse Cavill, I arrest you for harboring derelict soldiers.
I call the woman Edith Cavill. You are Edith Cavill, English woman?
Yes.
You made a statement to the police. Is that your signature?
It is.
The contents of the statement are true.
So far as I know, I made my statement in French, was taken down in German. As far as I know, that is my statement. But I cannot speak German.
You're not suggesting that it has been distorted?
I'm suggesting nothing.
Is it not a fact that between November 1914 and July of this year, you gave shelter in your house to certain French, English, and Belgian soldiers?
Yes.
One of them was an English airman?
Yes.
When they came to you, were they disguised in civilian clothes?
Generally.
But you knew them all to be fugitive soldiers?
Certainly.
You gave them shelter, provided them with money, and the means of reaching the frontier.
I admit that.
Were you yourself the head of the organization?
I did what I thought was right.
Why did you think it right to break the law?
Because the men were in danger of their lives. You would have shot them as spies.
Then they were spies.
I did not say they were spies. They were not spies. I said that if you had caught them, you would have treated them as spies.
You were aware that they were men of military age?
Presumably, as they were soldiers.
We have heard the admission of the accused.
Could it be doubted that this organization was a premeditated conspiracy to undermine the German authority? These people have put in danger the lives and probably caused the deaths of brave German soldiers in the front line by the breach of law. The head of this organization was unquestionably the woman Cavell. It would be said that she was a nurse to make use of her calling as a cloak for recruiting soldiers to the enemy was, we insist, the gross abuse of a noble profession. Against the woman Cavell, I demand the penalty of death.
Let this court put itself in the position of this woman, dedicated, as she had been throughout her life, to the service of the helpless, and ask themselves what they would have done. Her only motive in acting as she had done was to save men whom she believed to be in danger and help them to escape from the country. She never for a moment had it in her mind to do an injury to Germany. I deny the right to any tribunal of war to condemn a nurse to death. The life of that woman belongs to the sick and the wounded. The lives that many German soldiers owe to their skill in the early days of the war forbid the shedding of her blood by the German authorities. If what she has done was deserving of punishment, detention during the duration of the war is the maximum they should inflict.
Nurse Cavell, do you wish to add anything further to what has been said on your behalf?
Thank you, Your Excellency. I have nothing further to say.
How many soldiers did you assist in leaving the country?
About 200.
You were aware that in thus recruiting these men, you were injuring Germany and benefiting the enemy?
I thought nothing of benefiting or injuring any country. I thought only of helping the men.
Did you know that the offense was punishable with death?
I did.
The case is then closed. Sentence will be discussed and put to work.
Nurse Cavell, it is my duty to inform you that you have been sentenced to death.
When?
At dawn. I will leave you with your chaplain.
Seems so useless. I have so much to do before my work is finished. The new institute, the nurse's rest house.
It is God's will.
God's will. Sometimes so difficult to comprehend. But always he is weaving a pattern of immortality. That's what my mother would say if she were here. Would you see that a message reaches her that I'm quite happy to die for my country? That I don't regret for a moment what I have done. She lives at Norwich. One of my nurses will give you the address.
I will attend to it. Miss Cavell, why don't you make a personal appeal for reprieve?
Oh, no. It would be useless. Look, already the sky is lightening. Please, send my Bible to my mother. You see, it has my date of birth in it. Well, it's time now for another entry. May I trouble you for that pen, Chaplain? Thank you. Died October 12th, 1915, 7 a.m., German time.
My child.
Oh, I have no fear nor shrinking, Chaplain. No, I've seen death so often that it isn't strange or fearful to me. But this I do say, standing as I do before God in eternity, I realize that patriotism is not enough. I must have no hatred, nor bitterness towards anyone.
They are coming.
Yes, they are coming.
We are met today in Westminster Abbey to pay tribute to the memory of Edith Cavell, brought home to rest. The earth of her beloved England will be richer when it receives her mortal remains. The kingdom of God is richer since it received her unquenchable spirit.
We'll bring back our star, Ida Lupino. But first, may we leave this thought with you. One of the most notable facts about the practice of medicine is that one doctor's discovery in the field has always become almost immediately the property of all who devote themselves to the cause of healing. Shenley Laboratories pays tribute through this series of programs dedicated to the medical profession, to this unselfish, progressive ideal. Ida Lupino.
To sum up the spirit of the Shenley Laboratories program, this simple and beautiful prayer of the physician, written centuries ago by Maimonides, seems to me apt and fitting. The eternal providence has appointed me to watch over the life and death of all thy creatures. May I always see in the patient a fellow creature in pain. Grant me strength and opportunity always to extend the domain of my craft. This is the prayer of the physician. It is ages old, yet today, it is as new as the hope for a peaceful way of life for all the world. May we invite you to listen again next week at the same time when Shenley Laboratories presents Disputed Passage, starring Dennis O'Keefe and Hume Cronin, two great stars in a great story. Thank you, and good night.
The Encore Theater, on Tuned to Yesterday from August 20th, 1946 on CBS. And the curtain comes down on this hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden years. And until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. It's been a pleasure.